Brian Lehrer on WNYC and introducing the itsafreecountry.org video club. Right now on the site, we have an excerpt from a West Wing episode that eerily resembles the debt ceiling debate that's been happening in real life. I wrote up my impressions of fictional Washington versus real Washington in a budget crisis. You can write up yours. Our political video club debuting now at our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. Now, Mayor Bloomberg has made it a priority to reactivate the waterfront and build more parks in New York City, and they're doing it. New parks in Williamsburg, on Randall's Island. But the Brooklyn Bridge Park has emerged as one of the jewels of the bunch. If you've been there, you know what I mean. Big grassy areas, two bars, high-end food trucks, beach volleyball courts, and a water playground for kids. And soon, housing. Wait, private housing in a public park? Yes, an agreement was announced yesterday that will allow for a new 130-foot residential tower to be built at the north end of Brooklyn Bridge Park to help finance the completion and maintenance of the park. State Senator Daniel Squadron and Assemblywoman Joan Millman brokered the controversial deal that critics claim sets a bad precedent and jeopardizes the public in public parks. On the other hand, the city can finish and maintain a big, beautiful park. So right now we want to get into the question of how to finance public parks in a bad economy and if private development is such a bad strategy. Joining us is Holly Light, Executive Director of New Yorkers for Parks. That's a park advocacy group. Holly, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
And before we get into this, I just want to issue a correction of something that I said earlier in the program. I was doing a rundown of how our local congressional delegation voted on the debt ceiling bill, and I misstated the votes of a few New Jersey Democrats. I said all the New Jersey Democrats voted yes, and I just want to clarify that Congressman Rush Holt, Frank Pallone, and Donald Payne, all voted no. So to be clear, Holt, Pallone, and Payne, Democrats from New Jersey, were no's on the debt ceiling bill. But Holly Light, we want to get into the broader question around funding for parks. But first, tell us what you know about this deal in Brooklyn Bridge Park and your group's position on the agreement that was reached yesterday as a parks advocate.
Well, I think the important thing to note at the outset is that this is not currently parkland. If this was parkland and housing was being put in it and creating a situation of alienating parkland, we would have a very different position on that. That's something, privatization of current parkland is something that we would have a serious problem with. On the other hand, this is a project plan, and the park is part of a larger project. And from the outset of when the city and state made an agreement to create the park here, it was always intended that there would be some private uses that would help fund the ongoing maintenance of the park. So I think that distinction is an important one when you're looking at the precedent this sets. And the reality is that given the economic situation, the budget cuts that the city has faced, if we are interested, and I think as a city we are, in creating new park, particularly in high-value areas, we have to look at innovative funding streams for that. That's just the economic reality. And to me, the debate about that, the train has left the station on that. What we need to be doing as advocates is ensuring that those park spaces have appropriate public access and that they have the maintenance agreements in place to ensure quality public access and sufficient funding down the road for generations.
And yet my impression is that there is a lot of community outrage about this.
There's a lot of concern about whether this is a privatization of parkland, and I think the onus has really been on the city from the outset to say that this is part of a larger project, and that really has been how it was crafted from the beginning, was a larger project that would have private funding in it. The Brooklyn Bridge Park Development Corporation did an analysis where they hired an objective third party to look look at all types of revenue sources other than housing that could help fund this. And really, we analyzed that none of them would have been enough to maintain the level of quality that this park already has shown and that we'd like to make sure continue into the future. So while some of those uses the city has agreed will offset and shrink the housing, which is a good thing, there's just not enough there to do this without capitalizing on the housing potential.
We don't have a lot of time for this segment, folks, but if you live in the Brooklyn Heights Dumbo area or any other place from which you use Brooklyn Bridge Park, call us up right now and tell us if you accept Holly Light's argument here, executive director of New Yorkers for Parks, no slouch in the Parks Advocacy Department. Can you live with this 130-foot residential tower to be built at the north end of Brooklyn Bridge Park? The argument for here is it helps to finance maintenance of an A++ park and doesn't really encroach on the park. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. As I said, we don't have much time for this, but we'll take your quick call, so if you call up, you'll get right on. 212-433-9692. And Holly, we asked on Facebook, is there something wrong with allowing private housing development in a public park if it means you get a nice park that is well maintained? And if so, what's the alternative? So some of the responses that we got, Carolita wrote, hypothetically, why not? But why would the residents of the housing development want to share their park with the public? Huh. So in answer to that, it's not up to them, right? It's a public park, period.
Right, and I think it's really important that the parameters are set very clearly up front. When this housing is created, at the outset, before a request for proposals is put out, it's very clear this is a public park, and this payment is going to maintain a public park. And I think those expectations need to be set at the outset of the project.
And Angelica, writing on her Facebook page, says, doesn't that deprive the public of the precious green square footage permanently if a building is erected in the park? So is your conclusion that it just doesn't take up that big a footprint?
Well, again, I think this was always part of the plan. Certainly the Brooklyn Bridge and Brooklyn Heights residents have been pushing for this park for a long time. But when it actually became an economic reality during the Bloomberg administration, it was always understood that there would be some small sites and, you know, to keep the footprint as small as possible while still enabling an economically viable park.
Rufus in Brooklyn Heights, you're on WNYC. Hey, Rufus.
Hey, good morning.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the question is, my understanding is that part of the landmarking in Brooklyn Heights and the promenade in the park, which is good for all Brooklyn, all of New York, includes that the span of the Brooklyn Bridge is not broken by building. So when they actually took away certain buildings, it created so that you could actually see the entire bridge from the park and from the promenade. And my fear is that a building of 120, 130 feet would then break that span of the bridge and actually sort of destroy the view for all of people coming to Brooklyn. And I thought at one point that was actually sort of a landmarked view, so to speak. So I'd be curious to know what the comment about that is.
Holly?
The siding of the buildings has been done very carefully to protect the views of the promenade and the bridge. And so all of the development sites were selected very carefully with that in mind. So ostensibly the goal is to continue to protect those views.
This is part, and Rufus, thank you. This is part of a larger debate about how to finance parks. Central Park doesn't have housing in it. Prospect Park doesn't. Doesn't the city make enough money off the tax revenue from the properties lining Central Park to pay for maintaining Central Park? Plus, of course, there's the Central Park Conservancy, the private group to which many Central Park area residents contribute. So maybe another option would be to have a private conservancy to maintain Brooklyn Bridge Park, or even to tax the residents who live by the park. Most of them are, you know, relatively well off. And they benefit the most from this high-end park.
Yeah, I think there's not a single silver bullet for every park situation. The Central Park Conservancy is a model that brings a lot of private dollars into Central Park to augment the city's budget. There is a conservancy that's been set up for Brooklyn Bridge Park, and what role that will end up playing, I think, will evolve over time once the park is built out. It may end up having a very similar role to the Central Park Conservancy. But I think in this day and age, there's pressure on all of us to think of as many models as possible and think about where it's appropriate for those. I think it's interesting to think about there's these places where conservancies and models like luxury housing paying for parks will work. I think the flip side of that is, what do we do in neighborhoods where there isn't that kind of market value to help pay for parks? We need to make sure we're distributing the city assets that are left in the system in a way to make sure that those parks are maintained and new parks are created in the neighborhoods that can't necessarily afford to have these kinds of market rate options.
Jesse in Brooklyn Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, how are you?
All right.
Thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to say I'm just disgusted. I mean, I feel that Milman and Squadron have totally let us down. That Bloomberg, I mean, I live in the Heights, and I live right at the edge of the Heights going towards downtown. We've been just under attack from luxury buildings, from, you know, Bloomberg and his cronies and Doctoroff and his cronies. And I just feel that everything is a windfall for them, and I'm furious that our council people have capitulated to them, because that's what I feel that this is. And I understand park needs funding, but, you know, more luxury housing is just not. Yeah, I mean, people can't afford to live in this city anymore.
Jesse, thank you very much. Is it all luxury housing in that tower, by the way? Is there an affordable component before we run out of time?
No, it's market rate.
It is. So, before you go, it's now up to the community to figure out how to maintain the parks, right? Was it always so? I mean, you know, you talk about the difficulty of doing something like this in the lower income areas where you can't just put up a market rate luxury tower to develop a parks fund. Have we seen a real shift toward making public parks the responsibility of the community or the private businesses in the area?
Still a balance. Certainly, a lot of the new parks that have been created, particularly on the waterfront and in high-value areas during the Bloomberg administration, have been, a lot of city capital has gone into building them out, but it's the question of the long-term maintenance, and that's where the private dollars have come in. We shouldn't forget that the city has committed millions of dollars to the parks that have been created during the Bloomberg administration. $360 million is going to go into building Brooklyn Bridge Park. That's a significant amount of money. The real question is maintenance, and that, I think, is the big issue that we all need to be thinking about, both whether you're a city official, a park advocate, or a community resident.
Holly Light, Executive Director of the Parks Advocacy Group, New Yorkers for Parks. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a court rules that companies can sometimes patent human genes. We'll explain why and how this affects your DNA.